I'd like to turn your attention this morning to the fourth chapter, the book of Amos. Amos chapter 4. There's a passage of scripture there in verse 12 that is a very familiar passage, no doubt, to everybody here. He says in verse 12, "Prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. Prepare to meet thy God." Now, that's a very simple statement, but I believe it's a very profound statement as well. Prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. The context here of Amos writing these words has to deal with the sin of Israel. He is prophesying to them shortly before they would be taken off into Babylonian captivity. And he's telling them that the Lord has tried to deal with you. The Lord has tried to get your attention, but yet despite all of the Lord's efforts, you've continued to trek towards the cliff of sin and idolatry and heathen worship. You're just continuing to go down this path, ignoring everything that the Lord is trying to tell you. In fact, we can look to the context here and we can see how the people were behaving at this time. In verse 1, he says that they oppressed the poor, they crushed the needy, they say to their masters, "Bring and let us drink." You know, that doesn't sound like a good people, does it? That sounds like a people that have forsaken the ways of the Lord, and those that have decided to go and continue about their sinful ways. And we find in several verses here how the Lord has tried to deal with them. He says in verse 7 that I had withholden the rain from you, and there was no rain for 3 months. So the Lord's tried to cause droughts in this place. And yet it says in verse 8, "Yet have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord." He says in verse 9, "I have smitten you with blasting and mildew, and this has affected their gardens and vineyards, their fig trees, their olive trees, all of this, their crops, their livelihood." He's saying, "I've affected it all negatively that you might return unto me. Yet have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord." Verse 10, he says, "I have sent among you the pestilence after the manner of Egypt. Your young men have I slain with the sword, and have taken away your horses, and I have made the stink of your camps to come up unto your nostrils. Yet you've not returned unto me, saith the Lord." So what's he saying there? He's saying again that he's stricken them. He's actually taken physical lives from the members of Israel, but yet it didn't change any of their behavior. And verse 11, he says, "I've overthrown some of you as God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah, and ye were as a firebrand plucked out of the burning. Yet have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord." So here we find again, as I said, many ways that the Lord has tried to get their attention, but yet they're not paying any attention to it. They're just continuing to go their own way. And so now coming into verse 12, Amos is saying, "Prepare to meet your God." This is about to get serious. All of these ways he's tried to get your attention and you've ignored them. Now it's about to get real. You heard that expression in today's language? It's about to get real. The young vernacular today, that means it's about to get serious. Prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. You know, that's something that I don't want to be ignorant of. That's something that I don't want to have in my life. I've always hoped that if the Lord was trying to get my attention, that I would actually pay attention to that. I don't want to be like Israel here, where he's trying and trying to get my attention, and I'm just so oblivious as to what's going on and ignoring the things that the Lord's doing. I hope I never find myself in that position. That's not a pretty position to be met with. And certainly, we're finding here where they're about to meet their Lord in a sense of judgment. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day about a family that has forsaken the house of the Lord, and it seems like that family has just been having one turmoil after another. Just things like things just aren't going well for them at all. And the person that I was speaking with, they said, well, you know, the Lord may try to get their attention someday. And I said, you know what? He may already be trying to get their attention. He may already be trying to turn their life around, to turn them back to the house of the Lord. And yet, they're not seeming to get the message. But that's somebody I don't want to be. I don't want to be ignorant of what the Lord is trying to tell me. And certainly this is evidence that God judges His people, isn't it? The Lord certainly judges His people here in time. And their obedience towards Him will determine whether they live or whether they perish in this life. Not eternally, we know that. I'm talking about temporal judgment. But it says in Amos chapter 5 and verse 4, seek ye me and ye shall live. In verse 6 it says, seek the Lord and ye shall live. So their obedience to Him and how they're going to turn things around, that will determine the outcome in their lives. But I want to make particularly clear this morning that when Amos says in chapter 4 and verse 12, prepare to meet thy God, O Israel, I want to make abundantly clear this morning that that has nothing to do with eternal salvation. Too many times I have seen billboards along the highway, and they'll quote this verse. It'll say, prepare to meet thy God, or are you ready to meet God, or something like that. And it'll have two pictures usually. It'll have one of blue skies and green grass on one side, and on the other side it'll have high flames and blackness behind the flames. And the message that they're trying to convey is that now it's up to you. You have to make a decision. You have to try to prepare yourself, because one day you're going to meet the God of heaven in eternal judgment. And how you have prepared yourself will determine whether you go to heaven or whether you go to hell. That's the message that they're trying to convey. Well, dear friends, I don't want you to be worried about this morning. I don't think Amos was worried about that. I'm not worried about it, and I don't want you to be worried about it either. Because every preparation that needed to take place for the salvation of God's people has been taken care of by God. When He says, prepare to meet thy God, He's not talking about making preparations for your eternal home in heaven. The message of the Bible is that God has done everything that is necessary. And you know, I don't mean to make fun of these people. I don't mean to criticize them for placing their billboards out by the highway. To a certain extent, I wish that I had that zeal. To a certain extent, I wish I had the zeal of some of these people that are trying to win souls eternally for heaven. You know, they're wrong in their belief, and I wish that they would quit deceiving the Lord's people. I wish that they would quit deceiving themselves. But you know, I wish I had that zeal. I wish I cared more about Zion. I wish I cared more about telling the good news. I wish I cared more about the fields that were wide unto harvest and saying, Lord, bless me that I might be able to work in that field and send forth other laborers too, that more might be able to see the goodness of the Lord. You know, I wish I had that. My prayer for myself is that I would have more zeal. And my prayer for others is the same as the Apostle Paul's was for Israel in the book of Romans. He says that his heart's desire and prayer for Israel is that they might be saved. And you know, that's not an eternal salvation. That's a salvation to the truth. And he's saying, for I bear them record that they have the zeal of God. You know, it takes a lot of zeal to put a billboard up beside the highway. It takes a lot of zeal to go door to door, doesn't it? They have the zeal of God. Do you know why? Because they are of God. They're children of God. They have that zeal in their heart in serving Him. For I bear them record that they have the zeal of God, but not according to knowledge. They're confused. They're a little bit confused about the things that the Lord has done. But oh, sometimes I wish that we, not only myself, but we as Primitive Baptists had more zeal to talk to others and to tell the good news of Christ. But again, the message of the Bible is that the preparations required for heaven have been taken care of by God in their entirety. You say, well, Brother Nathan, are we just supposed to take your word for it? No. At Let's see what the Bible has to say. Let's see what the word of the Lord is on this matter. If you turn over to Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 5, you'll find where it's speaking of Christ and His entrance into the world. And there Paul says, "Wherefore, when He cometh into the world, He saith, sacrifice and offering thou wouldest not, but a body thou hast prepared for me." That's again talking about Christ and His coming into the world and the God the Father preparing the natural body for Christ. The body that would pay the sin debt for you and I. The body that would be hung upon Calvary's tree. And He's saying, a body thou hast prepared for me. You see, the Lord took care of all the provisions and preparations necessary for sending His Son into this world. John 3:16, we quote that often. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that He sent Him into this world is the crux of that verse. Well, okay, who did the sending? Was it you? Was it me? Was it me telling God, please send your Son into this world? No, He did all of that on His own accord and of His own will. He took care of all the preparations that were necessary, including the physical and the natural body of sending Christ into this world. A body thou hast prepared for me. Then we look at another verse of Scripture that deals with preparations the Lord has done. We look at Matthew chapter 25, and we see there where Christ is talking about the last day. And He says that at that time there's going to be a great separation of the sheep from the goats, even as a shepherd divideth his sheep. And He says there that those that are on the right hand, there'll be a statement made to them. Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from before the foundation of the world. Well, that's talking about heaven. So let's ask a question. Very simple. When was heaven prepared? It was prepared before the foundation of the world, wasn't it? Come, inherit this kingdom prepared before the foundation of the world. Now notice this. He says, prepared for you. Do you know that there was a personal preparation of heaven for you? A personal preparation. God knew before the foundation of this world who would live in heaven and who would not live in heaven. The elect that He chose before the foundation of the world would live with Him. He knew their names. He knew exactly how many of them there would be. And He prepared that kingdom for them. So, okay, we look at this and we say that heaven was prepared before the foundation of the world. And not only was it prepared back then, but also it was a personal preparation for you, Brother Joe, for you, Sister Hyla, for you, Brother Joe. It was a personal preparation. So if it was a personal preparation that was made before the foundation of the world, then let me ask a question. How then can you make any more preparations? How can you improve upon that preparation? There's nothing else that could be done on your behalf, could there be? If it was left up to you, if the decision was not going to be made until you came into this world and until you lived a life and hopefully the good would outweigh the bad, and because the good outweighed the bad, because you had prepared to meet your God, if that's what it was requiring, and then at the moment of death, the decision would be made as to whether you would be in heaven or hell, then how can it be said that there was a kingdom prepared before the foundation of the world and a kingdom prepared for you? It's because the decision wasn't up to you. It's because you had nothing to do with that decision. Rather, the decision was made by a sovereign God. One that said, I'll have mercy on whom I will have mercy. I'll have compassion upon whom I will have compassion. That's what our home in heaven is based upon. And thanks be to God that all the preparations have already been handled. You know, it's not up to the free will of man. If it was, I guarantee you that if it was up to your free will and my free will, we'd never make it, would we? All of our righteousness, as we've said before, is nothing but as filthy rags. There's no way that we could muster up enough righteousness that we might deserve heaven. But rather, it was something that was prepared upon our behalf by the God of this universe. So we see that God prepared the body of Christ, prepared the sending of Christ. We find that God prepared the home in heaven for the Lord's children. All right? What about in John chapter 14? In John 14, it's often talked about how Christ is in the shadow of the cross. He was getting ready to go to his crucifixion. And there he's trying to comfort the hearts of his disciples. And he says that I go to prepare a place for you. I go to prepare a place for you. You know what he's talking about preparing there? He's talking about preparing all the legal necessities for your home in heaven. That's what he was talking about preparing. He was talking about making sure that everything was going to be finalized and everything was going to be legal for your home in heaven. The people, the saints of God, those members of the elect family of God that had died and gone on to be with the Lord before the death of Christ, they were not there legally. They were there based upon the credit of Christ, if you will. They were there based upon the promise that Christ would come and would die for their sins. But he hadn't died. He hadn't justified them legally yet. So when he says, I'm going to prepare a place for you, he's talking about making sure that everything is done legally. That your home in heaven now is secure, and that no man will be able to undo it, nor could any member of the Godhead, not that they would choose to, nor could any member of the Godhead undo it, because you would have just as much right to heaven as Christ himself. And he says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. Again, it's a personal preparation that he did. And of course, I can't help but ask the question, well, who did the preparing? It's pretty obvious. I go to prepare a place for you. Was that you? Did you go to prepare a place? Did that preparation take place when you asked the Lord into your heart? Or when you sang, I surrender all? Or when you came to the mourner's bench? Or when you were going down the highway and you saw Amos 4:12 on a billboard with a phone number under it and called that number? No, the preparation was taken care of by Christ. He says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. Some might say, well, no, he just meant that there would be a possibility for them to be in that place. Because he says, I go to prepare a place for you that where I am, there you may be also. And they say, see that little word may there? That means that that's just a possibility. You might be there if you live right. If you've prepared yourself, you may be there with him. Now, if you go home and you examine the Greek of that phrase, maybe, you're going to find that that comes from a word that means to exist, to be present. There's no doubt at all, if you go home and look at the Greek, just as sure as Christ was going to be in heaven, and be there legally as the Son of God, so too will you be there legally as children of God. And so the Lord's made all the preparations that are necessary for our home in heaven. The crux of Amos chapter 4 and verse 12 is not that we would prepare ourselves and that heaven or hell would be weighed in the balances, if you will, and it's just waiting to see how we live our lives. No, that's not the crux of Amos 4:12. What he's talking about is we can meet with God in a way of temporal judgment here. Prepare to meet your God. It could get worse, and it's going to get worse for Israel. They're going to be taken away into captivity. But you know, judgment is not the only way we meet with the Lord. The only reason to prepare ourselves for our meeting with the Lord. There's another way that we meet with the Lord. And I dare say, just as much as Amos here was telling them to prepare to meet with God in judgment, we need to prepare ourselves to meet with God in worship. You know that? We need to prepare ourselves to meet with God in worship. I believe that the Bible teaches that the Lord is pleased to meet with His people in a sense of corporal worship. That is, when His people come together to worship Him and to honor Him. I believe He's pleased to meet with them in that capacity. He says, in fact, that where two or three are gathered in His name, there I am in the midst of them. Did you know the Lord is hopefully here this morning? Did you know that the Lord is here? That this is why we're here? We're hopefully coming to meet with the Lord. Is that why you came this morning? I hope that's why you're here. And I hope that in some small way His presence is made manifest here today. That you can leave this place saying, it's been good to have been there. It's been good to have met with the Lord one more time. Hopefully that's why we're here today. I'll say this, if you came to hear the songs being sung, well, you're probably going to be disappointed because there's a lot better choirs in this world than just the small number here. I hope that if you came to hear the preaching, well, you're probably going to be disappointed there too, because from personal experience, I can tell you there's far better preachers in the world than me. But hopefully that's not why we're here. Hopefully we're here because we leave our homes and we say, I want to go meet with the Lord. I want to go be with Him this morning in His house. What a joy that ought to be. What a state of happiness and gladness that ought to bring to us in our lives. Aren't you happy to be here? Aren't you joyful to be here? It's not like Amos 4:12. There, that was a place of judgment, a time of judgment. But this is altogether different. David says, I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. There was a man that had prepared himself for worship. There was one that was looking forward to being with the Lord. And I hope again that that is your feeling and that you will bring yourself to a position where you come through those doors. Your prayer and your desire is, sir, we would see Jesus. Not only that, but I want to see the Lord high and lifted up, as Isaiah did in his vision. That you would come in and you would sit down and you would sing the songs of Zion, and that you'd rejoice in the Lord, and that you'd sing, even as the hymn writer did, how lovely the place where the Savior appears to those who delight in His Word. Is that how you feel this morning? You feel that His presence, it disperses your gloom and your fears and bids your soul to rejoice. Oh, I hope that's how you feel this morning. Certainly that's how we should feel. It should be a happy occasion for us. We should be glad to be here. But maybe you say, well, Brother Nathan, I'll be honest with you. I don't feel that way. Maybe you say, it's just not what it used to be. It's just not as happy as it used to be. It's just not a joyful occasion like it used to be. I'm just not excited. Seems like I have to drag myself to get here anymore. It's just not what it used to be. Well, you know, if you ever felt that way on a particular Sunday morning, and I'll admit to you, I felt that way before on a Sunday morning. But if you've ever felt that way, or you feel that way now, maybe instead of blaming God or saying, well, it's just not the way it used to be, the Lord's not meeting with us like He used to, maybe instead of looking to Him and perhaps shifting blame, I ought to look at myself and say, you know what? Maybe I haven't prepared to meet God today. Maybe I'm not prepared like I should be. There's many preparations that need to take place. Prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. You know, one of the first preparations that has to take place in meeting with God is the ministry. The ministry has to be prepared. And that's a burden that I and I alone carry in this place, to feed the people of God spiritually. And I tell you, that's a burden to carry. That's a burden that is hard to describe. It's a constant burden. It's one when I start singing the closing hymn and for, you know, a few minutes thereafter, I feel this great sense of relief that I've executed the duties that the Lord has placed upon me. But you know, by the time I get home, I'm already worrying about next week. I'm always wondering, what am I going to preach on next week? And that's a burden that we carry. And I don't despise that burden. It's a burden that I rejoice in, that the Lord has given me a call into the ministry. But you know, I just don't know how some men can neglect that burden. I don't know how some men can just kind of let that slide off their backs like it's nothing. And they'd rather just get into the pulpit and open the Bible and just start preaching wherever it falls open. You know, that just doesn't make any sense to me. You come here on a Sunday morning, and if I've done my preparation as I should have, and I'm not going to say that I always prepare the way I should, but if I've done the preparation that I've needed to, if I've meditated upon the things of the Lord, if I've prayerfully sought the Lord during the week, then you're going to hear a 30 or 40 minute sermon that's based upon hours and hours and hours of preparation. But that's a burden that the ministry carries with them, to be prepared in order to feed the flock of God a spiritual meal. Again, not just opening the Bible and just preaching wherever it falls open. I was thinking about that yesterday. That's something I'm going to start calling the potato chip and Pop-Tart diet. You know, the people of God are here to be fed spiritually. And there's nothing wrong with Pop-Tarts and potato chips. But you know, when I eat Pop-Tarts and potato chips, that's when I'm wandering into my kitchen, kind of staggering around. I've made no preparations, given no thought to what I'm going to eat. And I just say, oh, that looks good. That looks good. And I go on out my way and I start eating. If I did that all the time, I'd be a very sickly person. Well, dear friends, it's no wonder that churches that have that type of ministry serving them, it's no wonder those places are dying out, because they're living on potato chips and Pop-Tarts. Well, certainly the ministry needs to be prepared. Paul wrote to Timothy, you all are very well aware of this, where he said to study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. And he said to neglect not the gift that is in thee, that was given to thee upon the laying on the hands of the presbytery. And he goes on to say that thy profiting might be made known unto all. That is saying that Timothy needed to meditate. He needed to meditate upon the things of the Lord day and night. Give them his attention wholly. W-H-O-L-L-Y. Give them his attention wholly, that thy profiting might appear to all. That is to say, the congregation needs to be able to see from the ministry that they are in fact growing in their ministry, and that they are in fact meditating and gaining ground as far as their understanding of the word of the Lord. You know, I've looked at that verse where he says that thy profiting might appear to all. I'll make a point. That doesn't mean that thy novelty appear to all. Some people have the opinion that if the minister ever says something twice or ever preaches something along similar lines, that he must not be studying, that he must not be giving his time to the word of the Lord. But he didn't say that thy novelty would appear to all, but that thy profiting might appear to all. In other words, sometimes you can get into studying the Word of God, and you get in there and you study upon the grace of the Lord and the things that the Lord has done for us, and there's just no end to it. There's just no end to it. And yet, the minister can continue to preach upon grace and upon the things that the Lord has done, but yet he might hit it from a different perspective. He might hit it here, and then he might go over to here and hit it from this verse. You see what I'm saying? It's not that thy novelty appeared all, but that thy profiting appear. Peter, he said that we're to serve with a ready mind. Well, how's one supposed to serve the people of God if he's not of a ready mind? That is, that he's meditated upon the things of the Lord. How can one be ready if he's not having those thoughts in his mind? Or the Apostle Paul said, I'm ready to preach the gospel. You think the Apostle Paul had done some meditating? I think he had. And the product was that he was then ready to preach the gospel. So you say, well, it's just not a happy occasion in meeting with the Lord. It's just not what it used to be. Well, maybe the first preparation falls right here. The ministry needs to be prepared. But there's other preparations that have to take place. There's a natural and a physical preparation that need to take place as well. Individually and as families, we need to try to physically and naturally prepare ourselves for worship. That means maybe we don't need to stay up so late on Saturday night before. Maybe we need to make sure we've got our alarms set so that we get here at a reasonable time and ready for worship. There's nothing more distracting, and I've been in this position, so I'm speaking from personal experience. There's nothing more distracting, nothing that'll take your mind off the Lord faster than running around with like a chicken with your head cut off, saying, well, I've got to do this, I've got to do this, oh my goodness, we're late, I can't believe it. And then you start to get stressed and you say things to your wife that you don't mean, and it's just downhill from there. There's a physical and a natural preparation that has to take place in preparing to meet thy God. But not only that, there's a physical and a natural preparation that needs to take place when it comes to our place of worship, isn't there? You go back to 1 Chronicles chapter 22, you'll see where David is getting the temple ready to be built. And David knew he wasn't going to build the temple. He knew that that was something that would be for his son Solomon. But he says there in 1 Chronicles chapter 22, and I believe about verse 5, that Solomon is young and tender, and I will make the preparations for it. Because the temple was going to be something so magnificent. It was going to be something so extraordinary. It would be something bigger and better than all the nations had. And he's saying, this is just too much for my son. I'm going to make the preparations for it. So he laid aside the steel and the gold and the mortar and everything that was necessary for the building of the temple. He prepared the meeting house, didn't he? There needs to be some preparation in a meeting house. There needs to be a nice, comfortable meeting house for the people of God to come to. Again, there's not a bigger distraction in the world than rolling into the churchyard. And I've seen this with my own eyes. Not here. I'm going to be very careful to say that. Not here. But there's been times people roll into the churchyard about 10:29 or 10:30, and they've got to find a broom and they've got to knock the cobwebs down. And then after they knock the cobwebs down, they go in to check on the bathrooms, and lo and behold, the pipes are frozen and there's no restrooms that can be used. And worse than a frozen pipe is a frozen pew. You ever sat on a really cold pew? Nothing's more distracting than that. How can you think upon the things of the Lord if you're saying, man, I've really got to go to the bathroom. I wish we had a nice, comfortable bathroom. Or, man, this pew is just ice cold. There needs to be some preparations made in the meeting house. And I thank God that here at Fort Wayne, we have people that are willing to do the work. I thank God that we have people that are willing to drive some distance to make sure that the heat or the air conditioning's been turned on. And if we've had snow, that the walks have been cleared and that the parking lot has been taken care of as much as possible. But those things need to be done, that the people of God would not be distracted, but rather that they would be fully prepared to meet with their God. You know, I don't say these things to convict. I say them to encourage. You're doing the right thing, and keep it up. But we find that there's preparations to be made in a natural and a physical way as well. But then we get to preparations outside of the natural and physical realm, and we begin talking about spiritual preparation. We begin talking about spiritual preparation. Exodus chapter 15 and verse 2. We find there written that the Lord is my strength and song, and He has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare Him an habitation. I will prepare Him an habitation. That's not talking about regeneration. That's not talking about being involved in that work. We know that we're passive in that. In fact, the book of Psalms says that the preparation of the heart is of the Lord. And so when it comes to that vital work of regeneration, that has nothing to do with us. But what this has to deal with is making the Lord an habitation, preparing a habitation for Him in our hearts and our minds. That is to say that we've exuded efforts that our hearts and our minds would be placed in tune with the will and the desires of the Lord. That's what we're trying to do. That's what we need to do if we're going to be prepared to meet our God. We need to get our hearts and our minds ready to meet with Him. Are you prepared this morning? Are you prepared spiritually? Is your heart and your mind prepared? Paul said that we needed to be prepared. He wrote to Timothy, and he said that in a great house there are vessels of honor and dishonor. There are those that are of gold and silver, and those that are of wood and earth. And then he says to purge those that would purge themselves from these, that they would be vessels of honor, that they would be sanctified, that they would be meet for the master's use. And then it says, prepared unto every good work. You want to be a vessel of honor this morning? I want to be a vessel of honor. I want to be one that the master is using. I want to be meat for the master's use. That's what I want to be concerned about this morning. He says that we would be prepared unto every good work, preparing ourselves, our hearts, and our minds for the worship of the Lord. You say, well, Brother Nathan, how do I do that? Well, one way is to examine yourself, to look at perhaps any sin that's in your lives, ask the Lord for forgiveness for that sin. Renounce that sin, if you will, in a prayerful sense. And pray to the Lord that He would be with the meeting. You know, preparing and praying for the meeting is not just something that starts when you pull into the churchyard, or certainly something that doesn't start when you come in and sit in the pew. But rather, preparing to meet the Lord in a spiritual way involves a prayer that would be offered daily. Lord, be with us when we gather together in Thy name. Bless us once more. I was talking to one person not too long ago, and I was asking them about church and so forth, and they said, well, I think about church when I get there. You know, that's too late to start thinking. That's too late to fix your mind upon the things of the Lord and to start preparing your mind and your heart. But rather it should be something that's done on a continual and a daily basis. Praying to the Lord, as I said. Reading the Word of the Lord. Ephesians chapter 6, Paul says that we ought to have our feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. You know what that means? That means that you ought to be looking into the Word of God, studying upon it, meditating upon it, so that you might know the basis of the gospel of peace. So that you might know the basics, at least, of the gospel. What the reason of the gospel is. What the message of the gospel is. That's what we're to be doing. We're to be preparing ourselves mentally, our hearts, and our minds spiritually by reading the Word of the Lord. So the question again is, are you prepared? I ask myself that question, and sometimes I wonder about the answer. We've got the meeting house prepared. Hopefully I've done my job that the Lord has given to me, and I've prepared myself as a minister. But as far as praying before I get here, praying throughout the week, making sure that I'm devoting time to reading the Word of God and meditating upon it. Those things are all involved with preparing to meet the Lord in this place of worship. You say, Brother Nathan, I'm not sure that I have prepared myself. I'm not sure that I did read my Bible this week. I'm not sure that I did pray to the Lord for the meeting. I'm not sure that I did prepare. Well, it's never too late to start. It's not something that begins on Saturday evening and ends on Sunday afternoon. But rather it's something to be done on a continual and a daily basis. You say, well, it's just not a happy occasion like it used to be. Well, again, maybe that's because we haven't prepared the way that we need to be preparing. It's a continual thing. And sometimes I find myself in that dangerous cycle. And maybe you do too. Sometimes I find myself saying, well, it's Saturday. Let's get prepared for church. No, maybe I should have started preparing on Sunday before and prepared myself throughout the entire week. Again, it's a continual thing. And to continually put into practice the things that have been said the week prior. Maybe when Wednesday rolls around, maybe you can ask yourself the question, have I put into practice what was preached about last week? If not, maybe you're not preparing yourself that way as far as doing the commandments of the Lord. But there can be a dangerous cycle to this, as I said, saying, well, it's Saturday, let's get ready for church, neglecting preparation during the rest of the week. I want you to understand this morning as we close that in these words of Amos chapter 4 and verse 12, this is something of an invitation and it's a challenge. And it's a summons. I want you to see that. Prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. It covers all those bases. It's an invitation, it's a challenge, and it's a summons. But you know how we have prepared ourselves. Let me say this. How we have prepared ourselves will determine the tone of that invitation, that challenge, And that summons, won't it? If we haven't prepared like we need to, it could be a little bit harsh in its tone, even as though it was written back in Amos, "Prepare to meet thy God, O Israel." But you know, if you've done the preparation and you've done everything that's necessary, what a joy and consolation it could be. What something it would be to look forward to with joy and happiness. Prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. Walking in those doors, knowing I'm in the house of the Lord and I'm going to meet with Him today. You see the difference? Our preparation can determine the tone of that. And so my prayer is that we'll continue to prepare ourselves as the Lord has commanded, and that He'll continue to bless us here in this place as we strive to meet and serve Him. Let's sing a hymn this morning.